to Overtime Hockey Talk. My name is Mark Paul. Joining me from on location, Justin Baker.
How via are you, Justin? Satellite,
via,
as they say.
Via Skype-a-lite. So we are, we're ready to roll into the end of this season. I feel like I'm already there, like I'm already in the playoffs in my brain, and we still have another 18 games to go, and I'm just kind of ready for the playoffs to start.
Yeah, I don't think that's unfair to say. I mean, for some teams, it is pretty much the playoffs. They got to keep winning, or they're going to get out. So
I will say, despite the Wings not being a playoff team, that they are actually putting up some valiant efforts in these late goings in the season. That game against the Boston Bruins was very fun. Incredibly yes. fun game. And the fact that they tied it at the end of the game, and I know that they ended up losing, but it's good to see that there's a lot of fight in them. And I think that that's something that it can sometimes be overblown. You can look at a team's record late in the season and you go, look at how well they did late in the season, or they held their own against certain teams. And sometimes it can just be because you're playing with no pressure, and it's a lot easier playing with no pressure. But I think that there is something to be said about figuring out which players want it the most, because they're willing to play even though there's really nothing to play for beyond the regular season. So I think it's a good thing for Detroit. I think that you'll find out a lot about your players when you're in a situation where they're 10 points out. I guess mathematically they aren't quite eliminated, but they're eliminated.
Yeah, I won't disagree with you. And I think for most teams, when they get into these kind of situations where they're not mathematically eliminated, but pretty much out, you end up having like what I like to call early tryouts for next year for a lot of guys, especially younger kids on the third and fourth line. Like, for instance, with Detroit, a guy like Tyler Bertuzzi, who is trying to make a name for himself still and trying to secure a roster spot for next year. You know, he's been thrown up and down that lineup between the first, second, and third line. And for a guy like that, you want to go out there and earn it every night and show that you have the compete level that's needed to keep a spot next year.
Absolutely. And it also allows teams to maybe bring in some players that maybe wouldn't have normally gotten time, but they're going to give them a little bit of a look because, well, they can. What do they have to lose at this point? They already know what they have in all their normal regular players. It maybe is time to start bringing players up from the minors, from the Grand Rapids Griffins. I don't know, how are the Grand Rapids Griffins doing? I haven't really looked at the American Hockey League standing other than knowing that I think the Toronto Marlies are rolling.
Griffins are doing all right. I mean, they actually used two of their four call-ups, the Red Wings did, to put Tyler Bertuzzi and Jared Corot back on waivers and call them back up, essentially, because they're making a push for the playoffs and they want those two guys to be able to go down and compete.
Right.
I know the Red Wings just called up Svechnikov, so he'll get to see some action in their next game because Franz Nielsen is pretty much out now after that David Backes hit. So yeah, we'll see how that call up works.
Yeah, Grand Rapids, they are third in their division, sitting with 69 points. So there you go.
Yeah.
The Marlies 40-16-1. So needless to say, they're quite talented. I don't necessarily think that it's because the Leafs have a lot in the pipeline at this point. I mean, I think that most of their high-end players are already with the Leafs, but they obviously have a really good coach. Sheldon Keefe is, I mean, there was several teams asking about him last year, and I think that it's only a matter of time before he's off to some team to be the head coach or an assistant coach or something like that. So,
yeah.
Well, obviously, that Pittsburgh-Philadelphia game last night was a little lopsided for the Penguins, a good game nonetheless, but we really saw Sidney Crosby show up, and I think that, that's a potential first-round matchup if Philadelphia falls out of that third spot in the division, so potential first-round matchup there. We saw, Arizona Coyotes actually have pulled themselves out of last place.
They're tied for last now.
They beat the Canucks last night, while the Flames ripped apart the Sabres 5-1. And Sean Monahan getting his 30th goal of the year. So good for him. Malkin with his 38th. I mean, Malkin's catching up to Ovechkin at this point.
Yeah, and so is Patrick Laine, too. He just put up a hat trick in his last game.
Yeah, and Laine, you could point to Paul Stastny being his centerman. I was listening to an interview with, oh my gosh, why can't I think of their captain's name right now? Blake Wheeler.
Yeah, and, I was about to say.
and he was saying, we can all see it. Paul Stastny is creating a ton of extra space for Laine, and it's showing. So I think that maybe that's a dark horse line, a dark horse move that ends up being a huge, huge boost for the Jets, especially with Scheifele getting hurt. But fortunately, Scheifele just probably going to miss a game or two, not a serious shoulder injury like initially thought.
Yeah, it's always nice when you got guys you can roll on the third line like Paul Stastny. And I mean, essentially, you're not going to have teams top pairing D play against guys like that. But I mean,
he's a second line center.
Is he? Okay.
Yeah, because he's playing with Stastny and Ehlers, right? So.
Right. But I mean, essentially, you now have a guy who, I mean, you know, Scheifele. When healthy, he's been on that top line with Blake Wheeler and Kyle Connor, and now you get an actual playmaker to center Laine now, which is just fantastic, and you get to spread out that offense, obviously. You know, so now that he actually has a playmaking center to throw him the puck, it's paying off.
Absolutely. You know, I want to just flip gears here for a second. What we're going to do in the show today and here in a little bit in the Players Tribune, the NHLPA released a player poll. And, of course, they asked players all sorts of questions and about what they thought of different players throughout the league and who's the fastest and who's the best and who would they most like to play with, the toughest, all things like that. And we decided that we would take the role of a player and we would answer those questions ourselves, living in the fantasy world that we live in. But before we do that, you were telling me about a quote that you had heard Andrei Vasilevskiy give about fatigue, and I want you to share that with our audience, and then I just want to have a little discussion about goaltenders and the ideal amount of games for them to play in the regular season.
Yeah, so let me go ahead and pull up the quote here really quick because I was not ready for this. You threw me a curveball, so I'm kind of happy you did. Honestly,
hey, I mean, you know, I'm really trying to appeal to the goalie in you. That's you are our resident goaltender.
Yeah, thank you. So, okay, so here's what he said. He said basically, tiredness is something that I probably never faced before. I mean, 50 plus games. When you play in 20 plus games, it's like you think, oh, I'm good. I can play 60 plus. But now when I'm on 50 plus, I'm like, that's tough. So that's why sometimes I'm probably not as sharp like in. Parentheses, I was probably the first half of the season. That's why I have to adjust and be at the top of my game. So, I mean, essentially what he's saying is, I mean, we all know this is his first season in a full-time starter's role. He's played behind Ben Bishop for a couple seasons now. And so, you know, he's never had that workload that a typical starting goalie does, which is 50, 60 games. And, you know, I can't remember. I think they got Louis Domingue in there right now playing backup. So, my guess is they're probably going to try to roll him in there a little bit more often now that they're, I don't want to say firmly in first place because Boston's, you know, three wins behind them. But
yeah, I mean, if you're the Lightning, do you not have to look at the standings and basically say, we're tied? Like,
yeah, I mean, with three games at hand, if Boston wins all three, yeah, they're essentially tied. I mean, Tampa would have the tiebreaker with more wins, but, right. You know, if you're the Lightning, you have to be on your heels a little bit. You can't just take it easy and relax just because, you know, I mean, Boston's playing, they're one of the hottest teams in the league right now, so you can't assume they're going to, you know, take a dive or start to dip, you know?
Right, and if you're, you know, sometimes you would just say, like, when I look at the Metro and you go, okay, Pittsburgh, they're in first. They're over Washington by a point. You know, Washington has a couple games in hand, so they might jump them. And ultimately, I don't know if it matters. If you're Pittsburgh, you're either going to play Philadelphia or you're going to play a New Jersey or a Columbus, maybe Florida, depending on who gets in. I guess actually, now that I look at it, winning that division is pretty, you know, if you have to choose between playing Washington, Philadelphia, or New Jersey, Columbus, Florida, I don't know if it's much of a choice. Columbus doesn't look great. Florida does look pretty good. I would look at Florida and maybe be a little bit worried about playing a team that has been very hot the second half of the season.
Yeah.
But do we really think that Pittsburgh would lose to Florida in a 7-game series? No, I don't.
No.
But could we see Pittsburgh losing to Washington or Philadelphia? Philadelphia, I don't know how scared I'd be against Philadelphia. No experience, well, especially after you just rolled through there.
Yeah, but they're going to get Brian Elliott back, and hopefully he's in tip-top form. And once they get him back, that's going to bring a little confidence and a little boost to the team.
Yeah, but Mrazek's played great.
No, I won't disagree with you. I don't think last night's game against Pittsburgh was any fault of his. I think that the defense in front of him just looked atrocious. But, you know, maybe that adds a little bit of boost and, more confidence for those D-men to make some plays maybe they weren't making and, correct some of the issues they had. But, I mean, I don't know. Just looking at the Atlantic and the Metro, the top three teams in each of those divisions, I mean, would it be fair to say they're a tier above the wild card teams right now?
Yeah, I'd say that's fair.
Yeah, so, I mean, in the Metro, you could probably say, yeah, wherever you get shuffled in there, you're not really worried about who you're playing, to be quite honest.
But I do think that winning the Metro sets you up for an easier first-round matchup.
Yeah. Oh, there's no doubt about it. I mean, you would like to win so that you do get one of those wild card teams, because I think I would agree, though. I think Florida is a little scary being so hot the second half of the season. But when you look at a team like New Jersey, Columbus, or maybe even a dark horse like Carolina that might squeeze in there somehow, I doubt it. But, you're not really scared of either one of those teams if you win the Metro.
Yeah. The one thing about Columbus is that if Bobrovsky gets hot right at the perfect time, it might be over for anybody that plays them. I mean, that's the wild card in the whole thing, is that if they can find a way to get in, they're going to have to start winning. They have won 2 in a row. And then they did beat Vegas 4-1. So an impressive win for them. They play Colorado tonight. And so we're recording this Thursday. So taking on Colorado tonight. Columbus in need of all the points they can get, because Florida with 3 games in hand on them, only 2 games back, they essentially have to consider themselves 4 points out of the playoffs. So
yeah.
It's time to get rolling if you're Columbus, and what better time to get on a roll? Maybe Florida. Florida played very well against Tampa Bay despite losing that game. That was a pretty fun game too. That was an overtime loss. Yeah, that was an overtime. Yeah. So Braden Point getting the winner in that one. That was a fun game. But yeah, Florida certainly looks like they are a playoff team. Whereas Columbus, you got to really question what's going on in Columbus at this point and whether John Tortorella will keep his job. Although, you know what I realized the other day? No coaches have been fired.
Yeah, not that, one. I mean,
and I said shocking. That. I don't know if you remember back when we were talking about which coach would be fired before Christmas, and I said, I don't think any coaches will be fired. So I'm just going to go ahead and say that I retroactively may have said that no coaches would be fired through the whole season. So I'm just going to say that. But there was somebody fired over the last few days. And, well, not fired, but essentially shuffled to the back.
Yeah.
Ron Francis, general manager of the Carolina Hurricanes, is no longer the GM. He was moved up in the front office somewhere.
Yeah, but he got the Gerard Gallant treatment out of that one.
I feel like it's more or less just an owner going, you know what, I don't really want to, I don't want to pay this guy for nothing. That's not smart business. And so we'll keep him around, but he's not going to make our player decisions anymore, because he essentially said he didn't make a move at the deadline. He's going too slow. And that's not how I want things to be.
Well, yeah. I mean, as a new owner in there, you want to see a good return on your investment. And if you look at a team like Carolina, who has missed the playoffs for so many years now, I mean, essentially you're looking at millions and millions of dollars being missed if you don't get in the playoffs. The money they can make off those you know, possible two or three games in that first round series, I mean, would be substantial for any owner to look at and say, why are we missing out on this?
Certainly. And we know that Carolina is probably, aside from Arizona, maybe in the Eastern Conference, they maybe are the team that has the worst financial situation. So, you know, Florida's been tossed around, but I don't know if Florida really... they seem like they're fine. I mean, everybody talks about, oh, Florida's a terrible, terrible hockey city, but there's never been any real talk about them moving. But we've heard Carolina talks moving, but obviously they're not going to move anymore with their new owner, but they need to start making money. I mean, that's... We all know their problems early in the season where they had, what was it, like 5,000 people coming to games, 6,000 people, and that's just not going to cut it. And so my guess is that, you know, when you're a new owner, you go, I mean, I'll give you a little bit of time, but chances are I'm gonna get my own guy in here. Like, I didn't hire you. It's not your fault, but it's also not my fault that you're here. So I'll see what you can do, and if I like it, maybe I'll keep you around, but don't be surprised if I... you know, move on and find someone else, and that's exactly what they're going to do. So, who is anybody come to mind when you think who could be Carolina's GM?
Well, I mean, you look right in my own back door. You got a guy whose name's been already floated out there with Seattle, and whose contract's up at the end of this year, and that's Kenny Holland.
I've also heard now, Kenny Holland linked with Seattle.
Yes, yes, I have heard that as well. But I mean, to me, I don't think Kenny Holland is the right fit for a team like Carolina, because he is not an aggressive GM. He is not a guy that's going to go out and make a ton of moves. I think Kenny Holland's been burned a little bit too much, i.e. on like the David Legwan and Robert Lane deals in the past, where he doesn't aggressively like to make moves for big name players anymore.
Would we have said the same thing about Jim Rutherford three years ago when he was the general manager of the Carolina Hurricanes, and he left, went to Pittsburgh, and it was like, okay, why is Pittsburgh bringing in this old school guy? And he's made some fantastic moves.
No, I won't disagree with you. And maybe that has more to do with ownership and the freedom they give their general managers, you know, to make moves. Because, you know, a lot of owners might look at it and be like, hey, I don't want you making a move for a big guy because I don't want to pay a salary, or I don't want this, and we have our own internal budget, so let's stick to it. You know, whereas maybe in Pittsburgh now, he gets free reins to do whatever he wants.
Yeah, that's certainly certainly with Pittsburgh, they have a little bit bigger of a wallet, we'll say.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I wanted your thoughts on ideal amount of games for a goalie to play in the regular season.
Yeah.
Or is there one?
I don't know if there's an ideal number. I think you would like to see your goalie at around between 50 and 60 games. Now, that's assuming you have a quality backup. If you don't have a backup, you essentially have to play him 65 games out of the season. And I think as fatigue starts to set in for guys like, you know, like we're talking about Andre Vasilevskiy, and now you see Braden Holtby being, you know, benched just because of his poor play, maybe not as much as fatigue as we might think, but... you know, I think now the way the game has sort of evolved, where guys are a little bit more physically able to, you know, to play more minutes, stuff like that. You know, we see guys like, you know, Drew Doughty and Ryan Suter playing, you know, 27 minutes like it's no big deal. You know, I think goalies can easily handle 55 games like it's nothing.
Now, remember, when it comes to Holtby, he's played 239-ish games over the last three seasons.
Yeah, that's a lot.
And then of course, another 48 this year. So another 48, you're talking almost 300 games over the last 3.5 years for Braden Holtby. That's a lot of games. It's a lot of games because he's played in 37 playoff games on top of 48 this year, 63 last year, 66 the year before, 73 the year before. And did you know that, the year before that, I guess he had 48. So, yeah, there you go. I mean, that's a lot of games in the last 4 years. I think you'd be hard-pressed to find a guy who's played more games than Braden Holtby over the last 4 years because of his playoff runs and because he hasn't suffered injuries. Carey Price, he was hurt in 15-16, so he only played, mm-hmm. what, 10 games or something like that in that, or 15 games in that season. So, and Jonathan Quick was out all last year. And so, I mean, you're looking at a lot of the top goalies at some point over the last 4 years have had something go on where they haven't played. Even like Marc-Andre Fleury, he didn't play because he had Matt Murray, and Matt Murray didn't play because he had Marc-Andre Fleury. So they split games, and I'm trying to think who else across the NHL, a top goalie, has played that many games over the last 4 years. And off the top of my head, I can't think of anybody who's come close. Henrik Lundqvist. That's probably it, right? And even Lundqvist, has suffered. He was hurt a couple times last year.
Yeah, last few seasons, Lundqvist, looking at his numbers, he's got 56 this season. He played 57 last, 65, and then 46 the year before that, just during the regular season. But if you go back a few years, Lundqvist, between 06 and 2010, he had 70, 72, 70, and 73 games in the regular season.
Right, right.
That's a lot.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, I mean, the last 4 years, though, nobody's touched Braden Holtby, and so it's no wonder that, you know, possibly he's suffering from some fatigue, and fatigue isn't necessarily just from the individual year you're in, although I think there is a number of games per season that ideally your goaltender's playing. I'd say an average of 60 games a year is about right. You know, if you have a good backup, I know they say your backup goalie probably needs to get you 15 or 16 points in the standings on average if your team's going to make the playoffs. So that means that your backup goalie, in order to get that, even if your backup goalie's 500, they're playing, you know, let's say that that's a 7
games.
to 15 to 20 games, and even that may not be enough depending on what team you are, how old your goaltender is. And I have to imagine that later in someone's career, where Lundqvist early was playing 73, he played like three seasons in a row with 70 games played. And that just, I think that maybe all that wear and tear early has been detrimental to him later. And so I think that if a team's going to be responsible with a goalie, they need to keep him down around 60 games. And I mean, honestly, it makes me think about Frederik Andersen for the Leafs, mm-hmm. where, I mean, he's right up there in games as well. He definitely has, I think he is the most games played this year as a goaltender. And at this point, he's at 56 games played. So,
yeah, and you think, too, for the Pittsburgh Penguins, for just a prime example, you know, maybe would they have had that kind of success they had with their last two cup runs because they had Matt Murray and Marc-Andre Fleury to be able to rotate them in the regular season. So come playoff times, you know, we saw last year, you know, Marc-Andre Fleury taking the bulk of the starts in the playoffs, and then, you know, Matt Murray the year before. But, you know, would they have been as successful in net had they not had each other to basically have a balanced season where they didn't have to play, you know, 70 games?
Yeah, it's another good point, too, is come playoff time, you wonder what it does when your starting goalie isn't playing every single game. Because, I mean, you're essentially talking a game every other day for two mm-hmm. months, right? Like, that's a lot of games. So, I mean, you're playing up to 28 games in an eight-week span. So, as a goalie, I know nobody's playing, actually. Lundqvist played 25 games the year they went to the Stanley Cup Finals, which is a lot of games on top of your already, you know, 60-something in a season. So we're talking about, man, maybe 60 or 70 games is too much. Well, they end up playing almost 90.
Yeah.
By the time they win the cup. So, all right. Well, let's dive in to this player poll. We'll give you the question. We'll tell you how the rest of the league answered. And then, you know, if we have anything to add to it, or just kind of picking somebody different off the chart, doesn't matter. Some of these are just going to kind of be, okay, we're just going to go along with the players, especially some of them where where they are overwhelmingly one answer. I think it's tough to argue with those, but we will roll through. So let's get it started. The first category is skills. And players were asked, who is the league's fastest skater? Connor McDavid, of course, took this 81% of the league, giving Connor McDavid the tip of the hat. Michael Grabner grabs a paltry 3.6%. Nick Leddy with a 2.4. Larkin with the 2.2, who has the, or at least he did have the record for the fastest skating in the All-Star game. And Chris Kreider with 1.6%. I'll be honest, I was surprised with Kreider in there. I guess I never thought of him as one of the fastest players in the league, but here you go. Did you have anybody different here on this list, or anybody higher?
Yeah, my number two, well, I shouldn't say number two, number three spot, I put Matthew Barzal.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, he certainly is. That's a big reason for his success, his hands and his speed. And I think that to me is, Connor McDavid's so good because not only is he so stinking fast. Now, I think we could redo this question. And a better question would be, who's the fastest skater with the puck? How about that question? Yeah. I think then you go Connor McDavid. I think Barzal is very high up there as well because of his play with the puck. I think who cares how fast you are? You know, I mean, no offense to Larkin. He's a decent player, a good top six forward on as long as he's surrounded by other really good players. But his speed is only dangerous if you can get him the puck in space, because he has a decent shot, but that's definitely not his number one tool. His speed is, and so you've got to be able to get him the puck with some space. And with the puck, he doesn't exactly dangle around people or blow past people the way that McDavid does.
No, but I mean, a guy like Dylan Larkin, though, he's got that first burst that really sets him apart from, I think, a lot of other skaters here in this category. And you might be right, too. I mean, I actually would prefer this category to say who is the best skater, not necessarily the fastest skater.
Oh, the best skater.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's...
And I think that kind of encompasses everything that we're talking about here, you know, with the puck, you know, how fast you are, can you really move, dangle, you know, can you hit corners really good, stuff like that. You know, how do you move when you have the puck in between a couple players? You know, most guys try to just go through players where other guys can, you know, like a Barzal who can take it in the corner and he can turn on a dime and just cut inside and just, I mean, leave guys flat-footed.
I think no matter what, you know, how the question is phrased, Connor McDavid is going to win the category of skating.
I won't disagree with you there.
He's the greatest skater to ever play the game. That's how far I would be willing to go.
Well, I don't know if I would go that far yet.
Who's better? Who's a better skater?
I mean, you could throw out a guy like Pavel Bure.
I don't know. Pavel Bure was fast, but go back and watch those tapes of Pavel Bure. He was a great skater, but he was a great skater because his body kind of allowed him to be. He was short and powerful, but the way he skated destroyed his knees.
Well, I won't disagree with you there. I mean,
whereas players now are using there's such a shift from powerful legs to powerful hips. And the explosiveness from your hips. So I think that players now are much more efficient skaters, too. So I would say that McDavid uses less energy and is faster than Bure. I mean, Bure never won any skating competitions. Not in like an All-Star game.
Did they even have that?
Oh, yeah. Mike Gardner had the record until Larkin broke it, right? He had the record for over 20 years.
That's true. He did, didn't he?
But okay, let's go on to the next question. Skaters only were asked this question. So goalies and skaters were asked certain questions, but skaters only, which goalie is the most difficult to score on? You had at 5% Braden Holtby, 8.2% going to Bobrovsky, 9.3% to Pekka Rinne, 12.1% to Jonathan Quick, and 41% overwhelming majority go to Carey Price.
Wow.
I was surprised about Jonathan Quick being up that high.
I'm not surprised you say that.
We don't have to dive into, you know, all the advanced statistics that show that he's basically an average goaltender who got a monster contract and got hotter than can be in the playoffs. So at 2 points, Pekka Rinne being that higher up there actually maybe is the biggest surprise, because before last year's playoff run, a lot of people were talking about, you know, is Pekka Rinne done and does Nashville need to find a new goaltender?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know who I'm surprised not to see on this list at all is Corey Crawford.
Yeah, but Corey Crawford doesn't kind of, I don't, he just doesn't get that love, right? Like, he's never been nominated for an award or anything like that, right?
No, not at all. And I think, you know, another guy, maybe you could throw his name in the hat with this too, might be Marc-Andre Fleury.
Hey, I wouldn't hate it. And honestly, I think that at this point, right now, I mean, this poll, I don't know when exactly they did this poll because they just released it, but I don't know when they did it. Mm-hmm. I don't think you see Holtby on this list at all. I think that you see Vasilevskiy on this list. Yeah. He's been phenomenal. So,
yeah, absolutely. I think for me though, with this list, what I would like to know is does this list mean just this year, or is it just most difficult that, you know, like a total over your career that you've been seeing these guys for, or who do you think at this point in time is the most difficult?
Yeah. What does history have to do with it? I think that it probably is more general, not just this year.
Yeah, because I mean, if we're talking this year, Carey Price doesn't really scare me that much this year, to be quite honest.
That's
you know, that's not completely his fault, but you know, he hasn't exactly looked stellar or stolen a couple games. And same with Jonathan Quick too. I think this year, you know, he's kind of dipped a little bit. And you know, for me, I would this year, anyways, I might put Bobrovsky at the top of my list.
Every goaltender has slipped statistically, though. So
this is true.
Okay, who's the most difficult player to play against? And this one, actually, a little bit of competition. Crosby coming in at 29.9, McDavid at 23.7, and then you had Patrick Kane, Shea Weber, and Anze Kopitar right around 4% each. So, yeah, give me your most difficult player to play against. I know that you've played against a lot of these guys, you know, over the course of your career. So, who's been a bitch to play against?
Wow, well put. boy, you know, I think for me, I would have to probably say I might have to agree with him with Sidney Crosby there at number one, just with our top two guys. I can't really disagree with either one of those right now.
Greatest grinder of all time, Sidney Crosby.
Greatest grinder. No, okay, if we're talking all time, ooh, then you might have to throw a guy like Eric Lindros' name into the hat there.
Yeah, but Crosby was still, like, down low. I don't know if there's been a player with his talent level who's been better down low than Sidney Crosby.
No, but, again, too, you know, we're not talking just down low. I mean, we're talking throughout the entire ice. I mean, I might even throw Mario Lemieux's name in that hat, too. I don't know. If you got one game and you're trying to think, who am I going to give the puck to that's going to be most difficult for the other team to play against? I don't know if Crosby would be my first choice if we're talking all time.
Well, we'll get to all time.
Yeah, yeah.
yeah, I did. It was interesting to me that Shea Weber appeared on this list. I would think that it might be more, you know, you just hear so much about Victor Hedman and how hard it is to play against him with his long reach, or like a Chara, mm-hmm. playing against Chara with his long reach. Maybe 5 years ago, Chara would have been on this list, and he's not quite on here anymore. But I'm surprised to see not to see more defensemen, because I get Anze Kopitar, phenomenal defensively. Actually, another guy on here that should be on this list is Patrice Bergeron.
Oh yeah, just absolutely
incredibly hard to play against, and it goes to show based on his line and their possession stats that are just like they are maybe some of the best possession stats we've seen since advanced statistics started to really take fold. So
yeah, and he actually would have been my number three choice for this category.
Damn. Well, who is the toughest player? Let's go to the toughest player. 2.7% said my boy Matt Martin, who always look forward to when he's benched because he's better on the bench. Michael Haley of the Florida Panthers. You have Zdeno Chara appears on this list at 4%. Milan Lucic at 14.8%. And then Ryan Reeves at almost 45% for the Vegas Golden Knights. Traded for a first-round pick. At
yeah,
one
from
point.
Pittsburgh. Yeah,
so,
St. Louis, and then
yeah, this one I think can take on a lot of, you know, tough can mean a lot of things. Who is your toughest player in the league?
I probably would have to go with now this is maybe where, like, you start looking at that word toughest player and you start to think, okay, is he just tough to play against because of his physicality, or is he just tough to play against because he's so difficult to take the puck from?
Well, I think is toughest. This is like hard ass to play against. Like,
right.
Yeah, this isn't hardest to play against, because that was the last question. So I think this is just who is the roughest, toughest guy? Maybe the most feared is another way to ask this question, I would think.
Okay. Yeah, I would have preferred that for sure. When I started thinking about this, I think the first name that came to mind for me was Milan Lucic. Now, not necessarily – he's lost his touch in the offensive category, but he's still a heavy body, and he's hard to move.
Yep, yep. My choice is Colt Knorr, and I'm moving on.
Ooh, okay.
It's not actually.
And I'm moving on.
It's not actually Colt Knorr. I'm going to say that any question asked in this poll, this one is the most irrelevant.
Sure.
Or the least no doubt. Relevant. Yeah, it's who cares.
This question was relevant 5, 10 years ago, and it slowly faded out.
Right. Yeah, I would have said Jerome McGinley. Who is the most underrated player in the league? This one was a lot closer. I actually wish that we could see more than just the top five, because I'd be very interested. Obviously, when you add up this top five's percentage, you're looking at 15, and then you're at like 30%. So we're missing 70% of the votes. So my guess is that a lot of guys set a player on their team who was who they thought was underrated. 2.3%, Ryan O'Reilly, Barkov and Kucherov and Schwartz all coming in around 6%. And then Nicholas Backstrom taking the most underrated player award, I guess. Who's your most underrated player?
All right. So number one for me has got to be Sasha Barkov. I think he could easily be considered a top five, top 10 centerman in the league, and barely gets any love just because of where he plays.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that. And we've said it on the show before that he's fantastic, and guys hate playing against him.
Yeah.
Does things that at high speed that guys couldn't dream of doing in practice. So yeah,
absolutely.
It's Barkov to me is top of this list. Backstrom, as quote unquote underrated as he's been, because he's essentially an Ovechkin shadow.
Yeah.
I think he's got enough love as the most underrated player in the league. He's been the most underrated player in the league for 10 years, and he's a good player. It's not like anybody's missing out or going, we don't really have to pay attention to Backstrom. Like, players know about it. Players know that he's a world-class player. He's an elite player. An elite playmaker, at least. And so I don't think that he's really underrated at this point. I don't think that matters. Jaden Schwartz, I can dig it, mostly because it was kind of this year was his coming out party. And before this year, it was like, Jaden Schwartz, he's a nice player. But I don't think we really saw how good he was until this year, until he was put with some really great players. Kucherov, I think last year we all figured out how that this guy was a top. Like, you had Connor McDavid, and then Sidney Crosby, and then probably three guys underneath there, and Nikita Kucherov is one of them.
So yeah.
I think that, and at any point, Nikita Kucherov could be the best player in the world in a particular game. He's that good. Barkov gets no love because of where he plays. The Florida Panthers, nobody gives a flying about the Florida Panthers, so it's just, he's there. Okay, we've spent enough time on that. Which player is the best role model? Patrick Marleau at 2%, Weber at 3%, Patrice Bergeron at 6%, Jonathan Taves at 9%, and your boy Sidney Crosby coming in at 33%. I don't know if he would have won this 10 years ago, because he had a rep of being a little soft, at least a little bit of a complainer, but I'm going to give it to I don't think that there's a better role model in terms of the way that he plays the game, the way that he prepares for the game, the way that he leads his teammates, and the way that he takes pressure and uses it for good.
Yeah, that's fair to say, and I won't disagree with you on that one. I could easily give Sidney Crosby my number one spot here. I think another guy that you don't really see on the list, and maybe it's because, again, I would love to see the other nominees and other players that got voted in this category, but for me, a guy like Blake Wheeler,
yeah,
would be a great role model.
You know, Blake Wheeler, I think maybe if this was done next year, he might be higher on this list.
Sure.
I think that when I look at this, I'm like, okay, Patrick Marleau. Now, there's 385 players voted on this particular question. So 300, if we take 385 and there's roughly 20 guys on the Leafs.
Yep.
Do you get where I'm if everybody essentially everybody on the Leafs goes, all right, so we got 20 guys, divide that by 385 and we're at, that's 0.05%. So, you know, all it takes is then a lot of Sharks guys, and I mean, he's been in the league forever too. Hey, so I think when you go best role models, players go, yeah, I mean, I watched him when I was a kid. He was great.
Oh, yeah. Been in the league. This is probably why you don't see a guy like Connor McDavid on this list at all.
Yeah, and being in, I don't know, there's something about being in Edmonton. And if you look at the teams that these guys play for, you've got Pittsburgh, Chicago, Boston, Montreal, Toronto.
In big markets.
Big markets, whereas Edmonton, nobody... Yeah, nobody's been to Edmonton. which player would you select to start a franchise? I want you to, before we give what the player said, I want you to give your, which player would you select to start a franchise?
Yeah. Boy,
I'm waiting for a goalie, Justin.
Oh, that's tough. I don't think you can take a goalie to start a franchise. I think you have to start with the cornerstone piece of a good centerman, but you can have a really, really good goaltender, but you have to have that number one just key centerman. So for me, I looking at it right now, it's got to be, for me, Connor McDavid.
Okay, let's say that you get a second player.
Okay,
who would that player be?
Oh, I still think, even if I get a second player, assuming that maybe 30 other teams have taken players at this point, and you got to maybe go down the list a little bit, I'm still not taking a goaltender. I'm still going to wait till like rounds, you know, if we're doing that fantasy GM drafting, I'm still waiting till rounds maybe four or five to look at a goaltender. I think I would probably look at a guy like Drew Doughty at this point.
Okay.
Maybe a Victor Hedman.
All right. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, ideally, you have Connor McDavid and Auston Matthews on your team, right?
Well...
ripping it up. I don't, I mean, it's hard to go away from Connor McDavid. He's so young and still getting better. So
yeah, although Sidney Crosby is never a bad choice, given that he's already put 3 Stanley Cups on his fingers. So
that is very true. Yeah, I mean, here's the thing, is that are we starting a franchise and trying to win today, or are we starting a franchise and trying to build something that we're going to have, be able to have a dynasty?
Right, right. Do we get these guys when they started in their prime at 20, you know, 19 years old? Or
hey, I'll take,
do we get
Crosby
them at the age
McDavid
they are now?
I'll take them both. Okay. Which defenseman is the most difficult to play against? You have Erik Karlsson, Drew Doughty, Shea Weber, Brent Burns, Victor Hedman, all the guys that we expect to be on here. But a close, Karlsson at 22%, Doughty at 20%, and Shea Weber at 19%. So who is your most difficult defenseman to play against?
For me, it's Victor Hedman, surprisingly.
Why?
Again, his defensive abilities just, to me, are so far above and beyond a guy like... I don't think it's too... let me rephrase that. I don't think it's that far above and beyond, but I think given his defensive play, is just it looks that much better than a guy like Erik Karlsson. Now, if we're talking about all-around game, maybe, like, you know, if you're throwing in... I'm assuming most of the people that voted for Erik Karlsson because of his offensive ability, right? When he gets going on the puck, he's very difficult to stop. He can make plays that not a lot of typical defensemen can make. But for me, I'm looking for that all-around game, you know, who is going to be more difficult to play against in both zones. And I think for me, I would take Victor Hedman in both zones over a guy like Erik Karlsson.
I'll just take Karlsson because he never plays in his defensive zone. How about that?
That's fair.
To be good in your defensive zone, which he actually is quite good in his defensive zone. But you don't need to be that good in your defensive zone if you always have the puck.
Well, I won't disagree with you there, sir.
That's what I'm going to take. Okay. Who's the most difficult forward to play against? We've already talked about the most difficult player, and it was Crosby. But when it comes to forwards, this list really changed. Crosby, 30.4%. McDavid, 30.1%. So very split on that list. Patrick Kane, Kopitar, and Bergeron all coming in around 5%. Who's your most difficult forward to play against?
I would probably have to give a little bit more love to Patrice Bergeron, but I think you got to put Connor McDavid at the top of this list right now.
Yeah, I'm gonna disagree. Stick with Crosby McDavid, as solid as he is. It's just, you know, at this point, I'm looking at the way Crosby's playing, and you're like, this guy has another gear. He just doesn't give a he doesn't care about the regular season anymore. What's honestly, they need, look, the first half of the season, the Penguins looked horrible, and then they went, oh, it's February, okay, and now they're in first. So maybe the Penguins are going to start becoming like the Ducks. And just like we said, the Ducks were way out of it at one point. We said, don't worry, the Ducks always figure it out in the regular season. And suddenly they're, you know, second in the division, and they're just fine. They're doing just fine.
Yeah.
So, of course, anything can happen. There's still only, I guess, three points in the playoffs, but a lot of teams would they have to jump a lot of teams for them to be out of it. They won three in a row, including a 4-0 win against the Capitals. And then they play Nashville tonight. Big test for them. If they can come away with a win in that game, things are looking really, really good.
That's
for them.
A potential third round matchup again.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Okay, what quality? This is actually a question that we can answer with some authority because we play hockey and it doesn't really matter because this is not a player question. What quality do you most appreciate in a teammate? The three qualities or the five possibilities: respect, loyalty, honesty, a team player, or work ethic.
Wow, I think I'm gonna have to go with team player, just a slight edge over work ethic.
Okay, a team player.
Yeah, I like guys, don't get me wrong, I like guys that have a strong work ethic, that are going to work hard and put out the effort, but if they go out there and they're showboating the whole time and never pass the puck, we see it all the time in beer hockey, there's that one guy that, you know, is always skating around with the puck, never gets off the ice to do a line change and let somebody else get a skate in. That guy, everybody hates that guy. And to me, he can have the best work ethic, but if he's not a team player, I got nothing for you. I want you off my team.
All right. Okay. I am going to say, I'm going to go off the board here a little bit. I'm going to say honesty. I'm going to say that, you can be a very hard worker, but if your honesty to me really says communication. If you're good at communicating, you're an honest person, because people that are bad at communicating, a lot of the reason why is because they either don't tell you what they're thinking or or they lie about it. And then it creates a lot of animosity, which that animosity can pour into your work ethic. It can pour into the way that it affects what you would see as a guy being a team player. If somebody's honest, you're going to go, even though that guy is willing to maybe talk some shit, some stuff, he's honest, and I think you can go places when you're honest with each other. So
that's interesting.
That's what I'm gonna say. If you need to win one game, who is the number one player, any position you would want on your team? Only one goalie. A goalie did appear in this list. Carey Price at 9.7%. You had Patrick Kane at 3%, Erik Karlsson at 3%, McDavid at 15%, and of course, Sidney Crosby, him and his golden goal, his three Stanley Cups, 43.7%. Do you stick with that, or do you go off the board somewhere?
Yeah, this is, if you'd asked me this question maybe you know, an all-time player, who would I take? It would probably be a goaltender. It was funny. I was listening to Mike Johnson on NHL radio today, and he had the just unbelievable privilege of playing with one of the greats, Dominik Hasek. And he said, if I can take anybody, I'm taking him because he can steal a game. A goaltender can steal a game more so than I think an actual player can, but then a goaltender can also blow it for you more than you know, an actual player can too. But if we're talking today's NHL, I'm taking Sidney Crosby. He's got the hardware to prove it, that he can go out there and win it for you anytime you need a guy.
Yep. I can't disagree with you on that. Crosby, of course, ran away with that. Do you like the way points are currently awarded for a win or a loss in the regular season? Yes or no? and obviously we have, you know, there's the 3-point system where you get 3 points for a win, and they're split up to 2 and 1 if you lose in overtime or whatever. But what are your thoughts? Any quick hits on that?
Yeah, I'm actually a little torn on this question, because for me, I enjoy having the playoff battles at the end of the season that the 3-point system creates. But at the same time, I think it's garbage that you get a point for losing in overtime. I think if you lose, you lose, and that's the way it should be.
So you want a 2-0 or a 1-1 back to the ties?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, he wants to kiss his sister more often. Which coach would you most like to play for? Top five: Peter Laviolette at 5%, Mike Babcock 7.5%, Gerard Gallant at 12%, John Cooper at 14%, and Joel Quenneville at 17%. So Joel Quenneville coming in at the top. Three Stanley Cups.
Yeah, that's kind of shocking.
Yeah, it makes you wonder. Shoot, if he gets fired in Chicago, he'll probably end up being the highest paid coach in the league.
Yeah.
Somebody's going to pay for him.
Yeah, for me, though, I have to say I'd probably want Gerard Gallant as my coach if I had to play for anybody right now.
I just don't know if I can handle that accent. I don't think I would. Like, Joel Quenneville, I don't know what it's like to play for him. I like John Cooper because I know that he's willing to really let his players determine how they want to play.
Yeah.
It gives them a lot of freedom. So I like that. And Peter Laviolette does a lot of the same. I think he's just a little less, he's not as popular. But Gerard Gallant being that high up is legit. It's legit. Mm-hmm. He's going to win the Coach of the Year. Zero doubt.
Oh, without a doubt.
Which current assistant coach should be the next head coach? DJ Smith took this one, 8% for the Leafs. Todd Reirden at 7%, Ulf Samuelson at 5%, Steve Ott, recently retired St. Louis Blue, at 5%, and of course the Rangers assistant coach Lindy Ruff.
Yeah, that's wow. It's shocking to see Steve Ott in there, just because, you know, a couple of seasons ago we were seeing him on the fourth line in Detroit. So.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
it's crazy. So his coaching career is not that long at all.
Anybody you'd throw on here that's different?
No, I think for me, I would reach to AHL coaches first before maybe plucking some of the modern assistant coaches. Not to say that they're terrible, but you know, I it wouldn't shock me to see a guy like Lindy Ruff get a head coaching job soon, or even DJ Smith for that matter.
Yeah, I think it's more likely that a Sheldon Keefe goes and gets a job. Like I said, I think that, you know, your top coach in the AHL is just, he's going to get a job, right? Because he's head coach of a team. Assistant coach is much more specialized. And so it just kind of, you know, obviously it depends on what that assistant coach is doing for that team, how much of a role he has. Let's go, which current player would be a great coach once they retire? This one, really, I mean, there's the top five, but the other is 77%. So the greatest disparity between all of Sidney Crosby wins this at 5.7%. Derek Stepan, Jason Spezza, and Matt Cullen all with 4.5%, and Johnny Taves with 3.6%. Anyone you'd throw in there instead? I mean, that's fair. Of course, everybody thinks that the best player in the league will eventually be a great coach. Probably not true. He's probably
Wayne Gretzky didn't pan out.
No, but I do think that Crosby's quite a bit different than Gretzky. A very different player. Crosby's much more technically good. Gretzky wasn't the best skater. He wasn't the best shooter. He was just an unbelievable instincts and IQ. And sometimes that's hard to teach. Whereas Crosby is much more work ethic, technical skills, ability to like footwork. He probably has the best footwork out of any player in the league, and especially in terms of down low. So I think that maybe he bodes better as a coach, but who knows? Why would he want to be a coach? Right. He's made so much money at that point. Whereas, you know, Gretzky didn't make – he made a lot of money, but he didn't make nearly as much money as these guys are making now.
Right. Oh, no.
But is there anybody else you want to throw in there? I'm gonna throw a guy, Henrik Zetterberg, into the mix. Ooh. I think that he could be a fantastic coach.
I would not disagree with you at all on that.
And Nicholas Lidström. There you go.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I'm surprised. He actually I think he coaches his son's little team. So that cracks me up just to hear him being a coach of a little Caesars team or something like that. So,
all right. Who's the best referee? Wes McCauley coming in at 47.8%. Then you have Kelly Sutherland at 17. Timmy Peel at 4%. Dan O'Halloran, local boy, Plymouth, Michigan, 2.7%. And 2.7 for Trevor Hansen. Anybody else you want to throw out there? Do we care?
No, we don't care.
I'm going with Ray Scapinello.
Okay.
They asked the favorite rink to play in. I'm just going to say your favorite rink. What's your favorite rink to like watch a game on TV in?
Wow.
Like Calgary's, I can't watch a game. It looks so weird because it's backwards, right? Like the cameras are on the opposite side, and I'm always thrown off. But which arena do you like watching games played in?
Yeah, I mean, of course, I got my personal favorite with the Joe Louis Arena. It's not Joe Louis, but the Little Caesars Arena. It's fantastic. But outside of that, I love watching games at Madison Square Garden. It's fantastic.
Okay, all right. That's that was 14.6%. I'm gonna say, and now the Bell Center won at 25%. I'm gonna say that as far as their like the show that they put on there, they were the first ones to do all the like the ice changing and all the special effects that a lot of arenas have now taken over. That is a fantastic environment. Any game that you watch, regardless of which team you're cheering for, the crowd is into it. I think I would love to go there and watch a game. Would also love to go to Bridgestone in Nashville. I think that would
be a fun
place to go to. Which rink has the best ice? We don't really need to talk about that. We have Bell Center at 28%, Rogers Place. Basically, it's Montreal, Edmonton, Winnipeg, St. Paul, Minnesota, and then Calgary. So all the coldest places, worst ice, no surprise, Sunrise, Florida, 16.7%. The Gila River Arena in Glendale at 10%. Barclays Arena, where they have to – that's just not built for hockey, 10%. The Honda Center in Anaheim at 8%, and the Rally PNC Arena at 6%. Which team, excluding your own, has the best fans? So you can't say the Red Wings. Okay. Which team has the best fans in your mind?
I don't think I would say the Red Wings anyways, but I honestly would have to put Toronto Maple Leafs as my number one.
Okay, I don't hate you for doing that. I'm not going to say the Red Wings, you know, if that was if that was your goal. No. the Leafs did appear on this list. They were fourth at 4.8%. Chicago actually won this list at 30.4%, Nashville at 19%, Montreal at 18%, and then the Jets were in fifth at 4.3%. Best fans in the league. You know, man, it's tough to not say Montreal. But oh man, Winnipeg too. They're a fun place. That's such a small arena too that it's really cool. I'm gonna go dark horse. Gonna say that I know that they don't necessarily have the best fans in terms of any history, but I do think that there's never been an expansion team that have had fans come out the way that the Vegas Golden Knights have had. So I'm going to give them some sort of credit towards this list that they are building a really cool fan base. So wow. I'm going to say them.
All right.
Who's the best forward of all time? We're going to all-time questions. Best forward of all right. time.
Well, I think that one's unanimous, although I got to give Mario Lemieux a little bit of love on this one, though.
Yeah, he was great. 11.3% of players said him. Gretzky at 72.7%. So that's
I am surprised not to see Gordie Howe make this top five.
I'm not really, because Gordie Howe, see, like when you look at this list, you have Peter Forsberg, Jagr, Crosby, Lemieux, Gretzky. So all those players have played. Maybe not necessarily the players that are in the league right now might not have really watched Gretzky play, but their parents did. Whereas, like, sure. our parents didn't really watch Gordie Howe play. You know, it's like our grandparents right. watched Gordie Howe play. And back then, there wasn't much on TV. You had to actually go to the game. So there's far less Gordie Howe highlights out there. There's a lot less, we'll just say there's a lot less Gordie Howe propaganda out there. Really, I mean, there's Gretzky. There's 900 and how many goals do you have? 894 Gretzky goals out there to watch. So, and they're all on tape. Like, you can go watch all of them. And Lemieux definitely was a sight to be seen. And he actually played. You know, he played up until 2005. So
yeah,
he was in the league for a while. Best defenseman of all time. Let's hear it.
I got to go with the perfect human on this one.
Nicholas Lidstrom.
Nicholas Lidstrom, right. Absolutely.
I like it.
Yeah.
Obviously, Bobby Orr takes this one 61%. I think, again, it's some propaganda. I think he played at a time when there was a lot of watered-down NHL being played at this
yes.
point, and he happened to be the best in the league at the time, and there's no fault to him. He changed the way the position was played, but I'm going to agree. I have to say Nicholas Lidstrom. Also, I think that if he had played longer, Chris Pronger would have been on this list. Chris
Ooh,
Pronger
wow, okay.
was unbelievable. He went to any team he went to, he took them from being a non-playoff team to putting them in the Stanley Cup Finals.
Yeah,
so,
well,
that's how great he was. Best goalie of all time. Here's your question here. I know who you're going to
yes.
pick, but let's hear it.
Well, we know you know, but the listeners don't, and I'm going to take the Dominator.
Of course, won his only yeah. Stanley Cup with Detroit, 2002.
Yeah.
That was a devastating
year. Well, he won
year
two Stanley Cups with Detroit.
Oh, he did, yeah. But he was, but he was like the back. Was he even the backup or what? What?
Well, the second cup in 08 against Pittsburgh. Yeah, he started the playoffs and then got booted after I think two games, and Osgood came in and basically stole that series
That's
and
right.
the rest of the playoffs for
That's
them.
That's right.
Yeah.
Patrick Waugh won this list at 39.4%.
Wow.
It's hard to argue with that. I'm gonna say. Oh man, it's such a difficult one comparing eras. I mean, geez, Patrick Waugh was the most fun to watch. Him and Hasek. Hasek, the fact that he won league MVPs is pretty unreal. So maybe
twice.
I'll go
yes.
with Hasek. Yes, 2 years in a row. Who is one player, current or former, you would like to have as a teammate?
Ooh. This would be a question of like, well, what do they mean behind that? Do you just want to have him because he's a likable guy and you'd like to have him there? Or
doesn't
do you
matter.
Want this guy?
Doesn't matter, Justin. Stop reading into it.
Right,
who would
right,
you
right,
like
right.
to have as a teammate?
Pavel Datsyuk, because he's so damn funny.
Okay, I like it. And he also broke Marty Turco's ankles.
That's true. He did. And Logan Couture's.
I am going to say, you know, 13.4% said Gretzky, 8 said Crosby, 6.3 with Lemieux, 4.6 with Forsberg. There's a reason why Forsberg's on this list, and you're going to find out with the next question. And then Lidstrom mm-hmm. with 3.7. I am actually going to pick, I'm going to say Nicholas Lidstrom, because wow. he played half the game and he won the Norris Trophy basically every other year.
Yeah, he really
if not
did.
Every year. So he was so good, and he played half the game, and that's going to make any teammate look better.
Yes.
Gretzky playing with you is great, but if you have a bad defense, it doesn't matter. I'd rather have Nicholas Lidstrom back there. Also, I think Lidstrom could come back right now and probably still be really good, whereas I don't know if the Gretzky in the 80s would be nearly as good now as he was then. He'd still be fantastic, but I don't know where he'd stack up. Who is your favorite player growing up? This is why I say I think Forsberg's on a lot of these lists, because 8.4% said that Forsberg was their favorite player. Iserman at 8.2, Sakic 7.4, Lidstrom at 5.3, and Matt Sundin at a 4.2.
Wow.
Obviously, a lot of Toronto, Ontario boys in the league at this point who were growing up when Sundin was the captain of the Leafs.
Yeah. So who would you put out there?
Oh, you know, I loved it. Was only for the short time that he was with the Leafs. Steve mm-hmm. Thomas was my boy.
Oh, wow.
I love Steve Thomas.
Old Stevie Red Wing Thomas. Player, too.
Yeah, he did play for the Red Wings, too. How about you?
Well, it started off as Vladimir Konstantinov, to be quite honest.
I don't know why I thought you were going to say Vladimir Putin.
Oh, no. Yeah, so it was Konstantinov.
He plays hockey. He plays hockey.
Yeah, he did. And then it was Dominik Hasek.
Okay, well, yeah, all right. Yeah. That's fair. Fair enough. All right, well, that has been our player pool. You know, all the time we've spent playing this NHL players, we have a lot of credibility behind what we have to say.
We do.
And, yeah, we'd love to hear, you know, what you thought of our list. You can tweet us at OT Hockey Talk or go to OTHockeyTalk.com. You can comment on the story itself. Otherwise, you know, just keep on living the dream, and we will be back on Monday with more from OT Hockey Talk. See you, Justin.